Blog Talk Radio.
Checking in?
Yes.
You remembered her favorite binky, right?
Binky.
You forgot the binky?
I forgot the binky!
Tragic. Hashtag binky dad. OMG guys, he forgot the binky.
Hey, it's binky dad! Hey, go away, go away!
Our top story. A father has forgotten the binky, but he is capturing hearts.
Binky Dad needs an escort.
Time out for Binky Dad!
Binky Dad, you're my hero.
He got the Binky!
Okay.
Binky.
She only likes the blue one.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Donesia, the commissioner of WBNN. For those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the Text Now app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J.
Like a Georgia peach tree, picking sweet tweet behind the seeds, running down your knees. Water flooding me, feeling up to my teeth. I looked over to the left. I think we should let it rain tonight. No, so I love it when we slip in light. Don't stop, love it, got a tough supply. Sleep, wake up and repeat.
This is a product. Thank you for that, brother. I was liking that. This is a product of WBNN. This is Know Your Rights, and I'm your host, Terry Strength. On air now from Lagos, Nigeria. Call in, family, 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. And, of course, this is brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. Before I begin, I would like to thank Brother Ovidelli and the ONU Dynasty family for giving me the opportunity to share my story and my perspective. The topic tonight is Spirituality, A New Perspective, interview with cultural analyst Dr. Cleo Monago. People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they have not communicated with each other. And this is one, this is by Dr. King himself. You have a second one from him. I have to repent in this generation, not merely for the hateful words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people. Human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts of men willing to be co-workers with God. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the forces of social stagnation. We must use time creatively, and the knowledge that the time is always right to do right. And that was by Dr. King. All right, so tonight we have a great guest. I want to talk a little bit about who he is. Dr. Cleo Monago is the creator of the Coveted Critical Thinking and Cultural Affirmation with the acronym CTCA methodology, a trans-breaking racism and oppression trauma-induced behavioral intervention methodology. This guy has been on TV1, BET, Fox News, and Inside Edition, or just a few places, behavioral health and cultural analyst. Dr. Cleo Monago's perspective has been seen and shared. As a writer, educator, speaker, and Black African defense-focused human rights activist, Dr. Cleo's work is featured in The Black Scholar, the Journal of Black Studies and Research, the Journal of Black Psychology, and the American Journal of Public Health. So he's our honored guest tonight. I'm honored to have him on the show to share his perspective and his knowledge. Obviously, he's a very busy person, and the fact that he took time to take some of his precious time to be with us is absolutely an honor. Before we get started with the interview, I just want to talk about, I mentioned this on Facebook Live, my heart goes out to Philadelphia Eagles fans. We had a tough loss at the Super Bowl. The city is still in mourning. It's been a tough 2022. We had our baseball team go to the World Series and lose, and now we had our football team go to the Super Bowl and lose. So hopefully there's greater days ahead. I just wanted to mention that. Shout out to Philadelphia fans, sports teams. So it's been a tough 2022, but we look forward to 2023. All right, family. So, Dr. Monago, are you available?
Well, before I bring on our doctor, I want to also say to our Kansas City following who listens to our show, congratulations to you guys winning the Super Bowl, because I don't want to lose market share in Kansas City. And now, Dr. Cleo.
You know what? Unnecessary. All right.
Greetings, everyone.
Dr. Monago is a Ravens fan, I'm sure. So, you know, he doesn't know love lost there either, I'm sure.
I don't even know what the Ravens do, so I'm probably not a fan.
Great. How are you doing, Doctor? How are you doing, Dr. Monago?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I'm extremely excited to have you on this show. So we're gonna get right into it because we got some things to talk about. So, to get started, tell me a little bit about yourself and how did you get into this line of work? I mean, that was actually my second question, but that's okay. Tell me a little bit about yourself for our listening audience.
All right. A short answer to a relatively complex question is I was a very sensitive kid who came from an extremely dysfunctional family that kept my very intrigued mind actively observing a lot of things. I was hardwired to have very little intolerance for hypocrisy or mistreatment of people. And again, I'm trying to make a very complex story relatively short. I discovered in 11th grade a phenomenon called psychology. And when I realized what that was, given my concerns, I said, okay, that's the field I want to go into, because this field intends to help to heal people psychologically. So I got into the field, and when I got to college, I studied psychology and religion, another topic that intrigued me. I just wanted to know why things were as they were. Then as I went from a boy to a man, I discovered hardcore racism in its purest forms, because I wasn't a little kid. I was a black man, and I looked like public enemy number one, and I was treated that way by different sources. And I just learned that black people in particular had a lot of challenges resulting from unresolved scar tissue and trauma resulting from slavery. So I know that's a lot, but that's a very abbreviated version of what led me to study culture anthropology, public health, and psychology, and become a healthcare professional and a community mental health analyst.
Got it.
Did you hear any of that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
Yes, I did. And I can see how that could be a complex answer to a question, because it's really it speaks to the African American experience, people of color in this country. So it is a very complex issue. So I'm sure your answer would be complex. So you were saying what is a cultural analyst? Like what would your definition of that be? You refer yourself as a cultural analyst. And you talked about why you got into it, because you said growing up what you saw, but what made you take up that banner and to go in that direction in terms of trying to bring about change? Like what made you do that?
Well, I learned organically at first that human systems occur within the context of culture. That black life context of dual culture, both white supremacist mythological culture and a culture that has developed among people of African descent called black in the Western world. So when I realized that people made culture, I wanted to understand how to impact culture and transform it out of some of the challenges that we may talk about tonight. And to do that, I need to be able to have a vocation in cultural analysis. Similarly, I learned about community mental health after I discovered psychology and studied that. And I learned about public health because my analysis was that the health disparities that black people face, almost all which are preventable, were not prevented because of mental health issues.
Right.
And cultural invasion. Did I confuse you some more?
No, I mean, maybe, but we're going to clear it up. So I have a question I want to ask, and it's not one of the list of questions I was going to ask you, of course. I get the feeling this night is probably going to go that way. So let me ask you something. So do people of African descent in this country have what you would call a culture? And by that, I mean something that was created by us for us as a way of moving, as a way of progressing. Do we technically have a culture, like, you know, people from Haiti or Africa? Because, I mean, our tongue is based on, well, it tends to be based on the oppressor's language and not our own. Would you say that we have a culture here in this country?
Well, I have to address something you said a moment ago to answer that question. You said that culture is something that people make themselves, and that's not true.
Okay.
Culture, culture is supposed to be something that people make themselves, but you and I speak English, and you likely have an English first and last name, or at least one of them, by circumstance, not by culture. Culture is a result of human experience inside of some kind of context where human behavior occurs and it's normalized. And Black people live in a culture that's not normal for us, that we have learned to make the best of, but the culture that we're living inside of is literally part of what's leading to us collectively dying earlier than most people, more traumatized than most people, and dealing with a collection of preventable challenges that we wouldn't have to deal with if it wasn't for the fact that we were in this culture.
Right, right.
But we do have a culture. We do have a culture. But our culture
We do have a culture. Would you call, would you call it a dysfunctional culture? Is it a dysfunctional culture or?
It's a culture that has dysfunction, but it has magic. It has swag. It has beauty. It has Africanness. It has rhythm. It has soul. It has genius. All kinds of things sprang from the African body, despite the overarching problem of white supremacy, mythology, and patriarchy. But we do not have an independent culture. Our culture is the result of many different interruptions, circumstances, and because we are particularly resilient.
Great. Okay, got you. Got you. Okay. All right, so can you... While you're at it, that's a great answer. So we're a melting pot of all of it. You know, my next quick question again wasn't on the sheet is, you know, we see in our communities where we normalize mental illness in our communities and people we're not getting the help that we need and we normalize it, we make it part of that culture. Is that what you're speaking also? With doing that, all of it?
Well, I, and pardon me for sounding so specific, but it's not an issue of normalizing it. It's really an issue of circumstance. Like I said before, you speak English not because you've normalized English, but it's what you have been given at birth. It's what you inherited. So it's what you speak, and it's what you know. You didn't say as a little baby, I want Swahili. You know, what was in your environment. So sometimes it's not an issue of what we normalize, it's an issue of us not knowing of any other thing.
Gotcha. All right. So can you explain thinking and cultural affirmation methodology or CTCA? What is that? And how can it?
Okay, well, CTCA stands for Critical Thinking and Culture Affirmation. And the theory behind CTCA is that Black people are in what I call a trauma trance. It can be called an anti-Black trauma trance or a white supremacy mythology-induced trauma trance. For example, to this day, up until as far back as the 1930s up until now, most children tested when they have a choice between the white doll and the Black doll, choose the white doll. And they choose the white doll as not just simply because it's white, but because it's better than Black. And it has better qualities than Black, and it's more favorable and more good. It's more positive than being Black. Well, that's delusional and anti-Black. And as a result of being Black with an anti-Black mindset, you can't help but to be traumatized. It's like being locked in prison. Prison is a traumatizing experience because you're trapped. A lot of Black people feel trapped because Blackness has a negative connotation in the United States of America. And more, because we have not addressed it like the CTCA methodology does, anti-Blackness is getting worse and worse and worse. And you can see on a daily basis, if you look closely, Black people dehumanizing other Black people. When you hear children, sit your Black ass down, you Black MF, not your age, not your color. I ain't going back and forth with you N-words. I'm living my best life. I can go on and on and on. All of those normalized phrases or circumstantially imposed phrases are anti-black and create an implication that we're anti-black. So the reason that critical thinking must be triggered and induced in black people is to break the trance. And that's done through a mixture of exercises and activities and materials that we engage during the CTCA process, so people will be triggered into being prepared for a culture affirming experience. You cannot teach people in ways that are memorable if they're in a trance. If they're right. in an anti-trauma trance, all your advice is going to be, in many cases, about as successful as someone in a domestic violence relationship with somebody that they claim they love or that they claim loves them. I'm sure you've met people before who are really smart, but not emotionally smart. They'll stay in an abusive relationship, even though you know that they're smart intellectually, but it's hard to believe that or understand that when they're letting themselves be beat. That's because they're in a trance that was induced by their oppressor. And we're in a trance too.
Got you. Thanks for that explanation, Dr. Monago. We have a track next by the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcast and lifetime achiever, DJ Olasky. What you got for us, brother? Thanks for that, brother. We have caller one in the queue next. I think this is the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting lifetime achiever, Jerry Petito. Miss Petito.
Hey, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing great, sweetie. So I want to share something. So Brother O mentioned the Super Bowl. My daughter-in-law is from Kansas City. And, of course, me and my brother were Eagles fans, and they had a big Super Bowl party. And my granddaughter, who's seven, is in the Chiefs shirt now. And I was so happy that she saw her team win. And you know what was beautiful about this Super Bowl? The two brothers on opposite teams. And I didn't know this because I don't follow all this stuff, but I've read that it was the first time in history two brothers on opposite teams during the Super Bowl. And they were, like, hugging each other. I have beautiful photos. So I loved it. I just thought it was beautiful. So I'm happy for the winners, and they deserved it, and it was just a beautiful game. But anyway, I'm calling in to say hello to you.
Hey, hello. Thanks for joining us, Jerry.
So
you have a question for Dr. Minaga?
I want to say hello to your guests, and I have something I have to say.
Uh-oh.
You know, yes, because you know my daughter-in-law is black, my granddaughter's part black, you know me. Okay, he doesn't. All my dogs were black. My little Minton, black. Even my cats were dark. I never heard anyone say what your guest said about pets.
Wow.
That just blew my mind. That makes me sick.
You never heard what?
I never heard you were saying something about they even choose white dogs versus a black dog.
Dog or dog?
Wait.
Dog.
Did I misunderstand what you said?
Yeah, he was saying dolls. D-O-L-L-S.
Oh, dolls. I apologize. I thought I heard dogs, and I was like, I never heard that before. Okay. Okay.
And you still have it.
No. Well, okay. I feel better. I really do. But you know, all kidding aside.
You feel better?
No, because even the dolls, I mean, how silly is that? You know, I grew up in an Italian household. You know that I had all different colored dolls. I never knew there was racism, and I've shared this before. Thank God for my father and mother, and my father was from Italy. I never knew there was racism until I moved to New Jersey in seventh grade. Okay? It's just heartbreaking to me. But I just wanted to call in and say hello to both of you. And, wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
I have a quick question for her. Just a question. You've never heard or seen any conversation or studies or anybody address the doll test that black children choose a white doll? You never heard of that phenomenon before?
You know why? Because I never even thought that could be a thing. My granddaughter has all different color dolls. I have different color dolls. You know, so to me, I don't even think about that stuff because I'm not even thinking it could be true. And I'm listening to you now. I mean, obviously it's true. I'm not saying you're not telling the truth, but I would never have thought that. It's just crazy.
Jerry, I got to come on. This is Brother Ola, Delaine Cozy. What the brother, thank you, Cleo, the good doctor, really talked about was right before the Brown versus the Board of Education situation, where we're trying to get a black girl by the name of, you know, Linda Brown, right, into the Topeka, Kansas school system. And before that, they tested the children in that Kansas area. What doll would you play with?
Wow.
With segregation and the humiliation, black children hated themselves enough to say, I don't want to be associated with what looks like me. And those poor children chose the white
doll. A white doll?
Because now listen. Because the white doll represented inclusion. It represented back in the day in Kansas, in that time, you couldn't go into a department store and try on clothes. You had to know your size because the white folk in the South did not want that clothing to touch their white skin because black people's skin were dirty and depraved. And so that was the situation that led to one of the most groundbreaking situations in America. I ain't going to say the best thing because, you know, I always say, and Jerry, you know how I feel about assimilation. Yes, I believe in desegregation, so because my money is long and I spend it, and I should be able to go to Miami and stay in the finest hotels. I should be able to drink out of a water fountain. I should be able to whatever. However, integration has really tore up the black system when it comes down to us being for us, you know, staying with us, buying from us. One of the most egregious things that could have ever happened, Terrace and Dr. Cleo and Hall of Famer Jerry Petito, was the tearing down of the Negro National League. Yes, we're happy for Jackie Robinson, and he was able to come into the big leagues, you know, the Major League Baseball, after the 74-year ban on black players, going back to the 1800s. But however, the National Negro League provided jobs, and it was a big business. And we supported each other. We have to get back to the time, you know, right now, to be able to support our own businesses like other cultures do. And black people still to this day go through a colonization. And it's something you might not even understand, Jerry, because you have a good heart. We know who you are. We know what you stand for. But some folk who are racist are listening to this show, who are ghosting and don't want to come on, you know, you racist and listen every night. Understand that we need to be stronger in our communities to show a good role, you know, and to support our own culture, our own businesses, and that way, that type of power is very important. And then we go back to 1921, Jerry, when we had our own businesses in Greenwood, the Greenwood District of Tulsa, and we were minding our own business, really using that term, minding our own business. And the United States Air Force bombed Tulsa, killed people at night, murdered them at night, just because they were doing well. Black Wall Street, to this day, is the greatest force of African-American entrepreneurship the world has ever seen. It is not Harlem, because at that time, Harlem was a colony as well. And now back to the program.
Terrace, I want to share one thing. I want to share one thing with you guys that did happen to me. About 5-6 years ago, before COVID, I went to Memphis with my friend from Australia to go to Graceland. And we took a cab, and it was a black African-American driver. So you know me. I talk. I'm not going to shut up. So my friend was sitting in the front, and I was sitting in the back, and I'm talking. And the driver says, "It's okay, ma'am. You don't have to talk." And I said, "Excuse me?" And he said, "I know my place." I said, "You know your place." Then it hit me. And I said, "Pull over, sir." So he thought, like, I was going to get out, you know what I mean? And I wink at my friend, and he pulls over, and I get out, and I said, "Now get out, sir." He goes, "What?" I said, "Please get out." He gets out. I go, "Now hug me." And he hugs me, and he's got tears in his eyes, and I ended up with tears. I said, "Never know your place. Never know your frickin' place." And we just hugged, and I couldn't believe that. And that was only a few years, you know, like I said, 5-6 years ago.
Wow,
heartbreaking.
Absolutely. When is your next show, Jerry?
So my next show, guys, is on my birthday. My birthday show, March 7th, Tuesday night, and I have Greg Morton from AGT on. He was the sound. You know, he does all the voice impressions. He did, you know, Rockets and Star Wars, and he's incredible. And he's going to be back.
Okay, fantastic, Jerry. Jerry, thanks for thanks for joining us. I really appreciate your comments, and brother, I appreciate your comments. Thank you, Jerry. I want to ask Dr. Minago. Yes, thank you. Dr. Minago, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned that that DAW test has been done recently. Has that been done recently?
Yes.
How recent? Last done in
Texas in 2022 by a professor. I forgot her name, but a professor at a Texas university did it again. It was done during the Obama administration, and it's been done a few times since the late 30s when it was first done.
And it's still coming out similarly.
Yeah, and that's why I developed the CTCA methodology, because the bottom line is the factors that lead Black children to questioning their beauty and their worth have not been changed.
It's still
those factors still exist.
Powerful.
And they can't, it's not going to change until the factors change, and they have not. And to give you kind of a hint of what I'm saying, in terms of what has not changed, there's a film that a young lady made in the early 2000s called A Girl Like Me. And in that film, which you can see for free on YouTube, she recreated the doll test for her documentary as a school project. And some of the babies in the sample were beautiful, African-looking, beautiful, adorable children who had locks. And the reason that they had locks was their parents' intention for them to feel good about who they are. But their parents were not behavior scientists or had a cultural anthropological analysis, so they didn't do all that it took, and the children with the locks chose the white doll too, because the reason that Black children don't like themselves goes beyond just a superficial aesthetic. There are implications in the culture all day long, every day. And I'm sure some of them will come up in this conversation, but there's implications in the culture that imply that being Black is a lesser state. And I've already described earlier when I first talked about some of those lyrics and songs and terms that imply that being Black is second class in the human family. And you cannot deflect those messages without an intervention. For example, most of you have heard the one-liner from a well-meaning elder, well, baby, you got to go up there and you got to be twice as good as the white man to make it. Have you heard that before?
Yes. Right.
So the problem with that line that's well-meaning is that because we are trained to be white accommodationists and to accommodate whiteness and not address racism, the implication, because it's a half, you look at it from a progressive perspective, it's only half of the narrative. Therefore, it's deficient. What they should say to their children is, baby, because of racism being bad and being a problem, and because white folks, people among white folks have an issue and are challenged and kind of dysfunctional, they're so ignorant they won't even realize how valuable you are. So as a result of that, you got to work twice as hard. Now that changes it around. With that context, you don't think that you're twice as bad, that you have to make up for being twice as bad by being twice as good.
Right.
And so a lot of well-meaning elders only tell half the story.
Doctor, I'm gonna say something to you, and I love what you just said. And you know, like this show is stepping on my toes, like Chinchilla J. Terrence Trump, you know, I can't shut up. When you talk real good stuff, I'm gonna come on. You know, paying the cost to be the boss allows me to be able to tell the truth. And one thing I told my son was, you're just as good as anybody.
Yeah.
Period. And not to go there, but I say you're better than anybody because you're you. And the reason why my son now is doing well as a culinary artist at the University of California at Berkeley, real proud of that. My only child is succeeding because that father image was there. Yeah, moms, you do a great job. I love you, moms. However, we need fathers to be able to impress upon our children. Enough said, part two.
Well, you're right that it's definitely helpful and definitely ideal to have fathers. But a black woman, and again, I want to restate that it's best to know your father and love your father and have a good relationship with your father. But anybody can raise a black child to have basic levels of self-love if they teach them to not internalize white supremacist messages in the culture. Like you mentioned that you let your baby know that you're better than anybody. What I would also add is that you need to let them know that there's this thing called racism that they're gonna run into. They're gonna run into it. They need to know it when they see it. Understand that it's a human imperfection and corruption that's predominantly embodied in people called white. And when they say crazy stuff about black people, it's their problem, not yours.
Absolutely.
I agree there, Doc. Absolutely. I agree there, Doc. And Terrence, hold on a second. To your answer, Doctor, I have also said that. And that's,
good.
Of course, because we wear that skin anyhow, right? However,
right.
like I said, it's very important. And, of course, we know there's a lot of single mothers that have no choice. However, I've said this, and Terrence knows he's on the show when I said that, you know, there's a cipher between good adulting and good parenting. And that, it's a cipher. And our community was strong when we had that family image. That family image is the reason why we are here today being activists. Because the people that, you know, were strong at that time, you know, came out of two-parent households. It is not to knock what can't be helped. We know that there are good black mothers out there that have no choice and have to raise their children how they are. However, it is very important in this new age that we get back to our fathers, stop being absentees, and raise their children.
You have no argument from me about the importance of knowing your mother and father and loving your mother and father. And I still want to reiterate that regardless of whether you have both parents or one parent, we must teach our children CTCA, critical thinking and culture affirmation. There's a lot of screwed up anti-black children who had two screwed up black parents.
Right.
That's what I said.
Right.
Look, it goes to the point. Goes right to the point where you cannot be an effective parent unless you are an effective adult. An adult. And adulting and parenting go hand in hand, Doc. And like I said, let's go back to Terrence and his questions. Appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for those comments. All right. So I think we have a caller two in the queue. I think we have Hall of Fame broadcast and lifetime achiever Huni Bakatun. Huni.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Hall of
Great.
Fame inducted, Hall of Fame enshrined. How you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in, Huni.
Oh,
I love it.
No doubt. And honor to you, special honored guest as well. Look, let me see if I can chime in right quick. There's a lot of ways. First of all, thank you so much, special honored guest, for sharing your input and coming on with us tonight at our great company. You know,
sure.
One of the things that one of my greatest challenges for well over 37 years, going into my 38th year, is trying to reach our people. And it's something as simple as this here. Our people who was in bondage for quite a while, in biblical terms, it was 400 years, okay? And when you take a people that was stripped of everything that you can imagine, even when it comes to stories that existed pre-Bible, pre-Torah, pre-El-Quran, and all of these religious books, right? When you strip a people from all of that, language, customs, culture, all of that, even this great land over here in America, most so-called African-Americans, the American side, don't know which tribe that they actually linked back to as a Native American, because most of the people that was taken in bondage was taken right here on this great soil. So one of the greatest challenges is trying to get our people to re-love themselves, really love themselves, not that synthetic love, but to love themselves, not to hate the embodiment, the physical features or characteristics of a race, right, to hate them, but definitely hate what white supremacy have did to them has been some of my greatest challenges, because what's so crazy about it is these same people that's been in bondage for over 400 years and counting have fell so in love with the people that captivated their mind, stole their customs and their culture, right? And they had the audacity to still love them more than they love themselves. And to put this on record right quick, I never ever in my 37 to 38 years suggested that we hate another people, but I definitely want us to start to hate our circumstances, start to hate the miseducation that has been used as a tool to really brainwash us. So a lot of the things that you see the so-called African-American doing to themselves and each other isn't our mindset. That's the mindset that was pretty much instilled by the people that held our people in captivity. It's just like that. You know, something as simple as our people in religious terms, they would see Jesus in the image of a Caucasian, and they will make him the son of God, right? And if he's the son of God, which means that his father, the heavenly father, got to be white, and anything opposite of God got to be the devil. Ain't no way around it. So that opens the door for a lot of our people to say, you know, I can't attack a Caucasian because they're in the image and after the likeness of God. There's no way around that.
You're absolutely right. And all that is about as true as you already know this, as Santa Claus. You know, it's about as true as the Easter Bunny. It's all myth. However, if you give good advice to people who are in what I call the trauma trance, in many cases, that good advice, as I said before, will work as well as trying to get somebody to leave somebody who's abusing them that they think they're in love with. They're not going to leave because they've been tempted, and they've been successfully traumatized into submission. And they've been traumatized into an inferiority complex compared to their pimp or their domestic violator. Even if they're intellectually brilliant, if they're emotionally traumatized, they may not take your advice. And black people are the domestic violence victims of the United States of America. So we don't take the advice, not because we're stupid, not because we're making all these choices that people keep thinking is all these choices going on, it's because we are in a trauma trance, and the trance must be broken. And that's what my methodology, the CTCA methodology, does. It breaks black people from the trauma trance.
I definitely want to learn more about what you have to offer. I know some other people want to call in, so I got one more thing I want to say. I'm the host of We Will Aware You, and my very next show, my very special honored guest will be Hall of Fame inducted, enshrined, as well as Lifetime Achiever, Jerry Petito, on March 9th. And we'll be speaking about the rise and falls pathway towards success. That'll be March 9th. And Jerry Petito will definitely be my special honored guest, and I'm going to take time to interview the interviewer. So anyway, one more thing for the Hall of Fame enshrined, Mr. Terrence Trent. Can you hear me, sir? I want to make sure you hear me loud and clear. Wow, I'm so proud to do this. Congratulations, 2022 International Internet Radio Hall of Fame Broadcasting enshrinee, Terry Strent, on your 49th WBNN All-Time Connection record with your 9th consecutive with the historic Darlene Lawrence Championship, honoring our late Hall of Famer. I'm so proud of you. As your
thank
former
you,
campaign manager, man, keep raising the bar. I love you with the heart and soul of me.
Thank you, homie. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Huni Bagatun. All right. So I think we have a track next, brother. I think we have a track next. Internet Hall of Fame. Comments and for Huni. Dr. Binago, I got to ask you a question, okay? So this process, is this similar to rewiring the brain like what Nellie Fuller was trying to do? And how long does it take? And how do you know it's completed? Like talk more about this process. So what actually happens? You talked a little bit about it. Can you go into a little bit more depth about this process?
Yeah. Rewiring the brain. That terminology may fit. I've never used it, not because it's not appropriate, but because I look at Black dysfunctional behavior as a potentially temporary condition based on a configuration of a reality construct. I mean, the brother just talked about a moment ago about how we, I think Jesus is white, all that stuff. But all that is true. You know, we are brainwashed and we are misguided. So as opposed to using the term rewiring, which frankly does fit, I look at it as trance breaking. I think that we're in a trance, that we're not fully present. I think that we're only partly present and partly here because we're in this unconscious negotiation with ourselves about whether we're valuable or not, and whether being black and being of African descent and looking like a black person is valuable. There's more black blondes now damn near than there are white blondes. And it's all fake, that being black is not good enough, and that we must replicate whiteness to be beautiful. And we're doing some really cruel, awful things resulting from this. But the CTCA model does a lot of activities, materials, workshops, processes that breaks the trance in ways that black people cannot deny. We don't tell black people how to think. We tell black people to think. For example, we have a project called Watu Wajua, which means children of the sun in Swahili. One of the activities that goes along with that project is we ask the young kids in the class to bring media items, books, magazines, social media pages, whatever, that they feel that they enjoy, that they frequent a lot for fun. And what they'll find in many cases is that what they're seeing and playing with does not affirm them. Like a lot of young people like games. Well, most computer games make them, they literally have to be white. The avatar is a white male in most cases. So they learn, we don't tell them that's good or bad. We just ask them, does it make them feel good about who they are and the body they're in? And they realize that now that they're not just normalizing the lack of affirmation, that no, this does not make me feel good about who I am. This does make me feel being white is better than being black. And now that I'm awake to this perspective that's in me, we give them some work to do and some exercises to actually engage that mythology that they have been raised to not even question.
Right. Dr. Monago, we got another caller in the queue. Caller three, who am I speaking with?
Hi, Mr. Terrence Strength and Dr. Cleo. A pleasure to speak with you both. This is Ava Holly. How are you?
Great. Good
evening. Crazy. Ava. That's where I live. Well, first of all, let me congratulate you on your connection record, Terrace. You are doing such amazing things, and I'm so proud of you and just honored to know you and be in the world that you are living in and creating. I didn't think I was going to have much to add and speak about or comment about, yet I do have a couple things I want to bring up. A couple things are funny, and a couple things are not so funny. But first of all, I got to give it out to my girl, Jerry Petito, who thought it was dogs instead of dolls. But I got to tell you, my dog is black, white, and silver. And their breed has a tan and white, a black, white, and silver, and a solid black, solid brown, and solid white. Those are the main colors of this particular breed. And it is really funny because I belong to a page on Facebook that, you know, talks about all these breeds, and it's just really funny as to what Jerry said. So let me tell you one thing. I can't share from experience of skin color because I have a particular skin color and that's it. Yet I can share some experience. I grew up in Brooklyn. Like Jerry said, thank God for my parents because I didn't know what racism was. It was not a thing for me until I had a friend that I invited over to my house, and she said to me, I have to ask my mother if it's okay if I come in your house. And I'm like, why? Is it dirty or something? And she said, no, because your family is white. I have to ask if it's okay. And that, like, blew my mind as a kid, so I can relate to what Dr. Cleo's saying about, you know, the mind, conditioning the mind. My father, and now I'm going back to the, like, around the 70s, maybe late 70s even, my father was kicked out of his business and his home because we were Jewish. And my family's mixed, like all of our ancestry. My family's French-Canadian, Italian, Jewish, American, whatever. My daughter's Jamaican, Chinese, and Irish, and French-Canadian. So it's crazy. But I remember us being kicked out of our residence and kicked out of our business in a way that it didn't look like it was anti-Semitism. Yet, you know, I still have those feelings in my mind about that. So I find it very interesting. The other funny thing I was going to say was that my daughter, when she was little and I'd push her around in the stroller, she would say, "Hey, mommy, look at that white man," or, "Hey, mommy, look at that black man." And I was like, neither of those people are black or white. And I couldn't understand what she was talking about until one day she said, "Mommy, look at that purple man." And I realized she was talking about the colors of their shirts. So it was just mind-boggling to me because she didn't notice the color of their skin. She noticed the color of their shirts at a very young age. And when she was six, my Jamaican, Chinese, and Irish husband and I split up. So I know the feeling of a child that doesn't have a father around. So, you know, it's important that we understand not only the mind, but our surroundings. Like you said, if you took a child and put them in, a rich area and took the same, a sibling from that family and put them in a poor area, how would they grow up? Would they be different, or would, you know, their attitudes and actions and whatever be the same? So I think that goes down to everything, and we have to educate their minds. We have to educate their souls, like Dr. Cleo was saying. And I think it's important that children have a perspective from mothers, fathers, and father figures or mother figures that come into their life in a good way, big brothers, big sisters, anything that helps shape and create a positive mind. And I did know about the doll story, but and the doll test, but I thought that was from way back, and I just got educated a little bit on that. Yet you're saying this one was done in 2022. That's disgusting. Yep. And mind-boggling to me. But anyway, those are my opinions. Those are my experiences in life. God bless you both, and Terrace, have a great rest of your show.
Thank you, Ava. When is your next show, Ava? This is tomorrow.
My
right?
next show is tomorrow evening, and we are going to have a very colorful Jonathan Bengel talking about entrepreneurship and all that he's done to create a space in this world for what he does. So it's going to be really crazy. Plus the Atlantic City Ballet talking about their 40th gala. So we're going to have a nice, fun time tomorrow night.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Ava. Thank you very much. We have another caller in the queue, caller four in the queue. Who am I speaking with?
Yes, good evening. My name is Matt Graham. I'm actually an intern host. Actually, I'll get this out of the way first. I usually don't like to call in. Sometimes I want to hold back because I figure there might be listeners and that host that might want to hit one first. But I have a show as well coming up on February 23rd called the ONE Intern Host Radio Show. That's going to be like my first show, so I'm really looking forward to it. I'm a little bit paranoid and enthused at the same time, as could be
understood. Welcome, brother. Yes, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. I had a statement to make, and I have a question to your guest as well.
Sure.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Clark's doll experiment. I remember when it came out a long time ago. And yeah, you're right. I don't know how many. Sorry about that. That's been going out on the storm. Right, I just turned it off. I remember that experiment. They did do one that was updated. And we talk about them, and a lot of people say, "Oh, man, yeah, can you believe what they did to those poor kids? And look at what the end result was." But when people have to stop for a second, even this generation right now, if that happened back then, and I believe the late 60s, early 70s,
it was the late
30s. End product of all of this. So it's not like it's just those children, because that was a universal way of thinking back then. This is such a massive form of brainwashing, propaganda. It's almost like you look out at the world and say, like, okay, what is this? But it's kind of like looking at the standards again. Like, even if you look at, I don't want to knock a holiday too much in certain aspects of it. I'm a more Orthodox Christian. I believe in the Bible. So when other things start to get introduced, and we're told things like this, for example, there's a fat guy. He comes from the coldest place of the planet, the North Pole, where even polar bears find it hard to survive, right? But one day of the year, he decides to use mind power and 12 reindeer, one with a nose that glows in the dark. He uses his mind power to levitate a sleigh over the entire planet Earth and visit everybody on the planet, except for, like, maybe Orthodox Christians, Jehovah's Witnesses, Muslims, and he breaks in their homes. But instead of stealing anything, he leaves lots of gifts and presents for children, and sometimes he eats cookies and leaves a note behind. It's kind of like we're a product of this, and it's so overwhelming that there's like no escape. It's almost like you look out at this and say, okay, once you understand this, this is the question I had to ask you, because it went from generation to generation to the point where we had to deal with, like, exploitation movies, music being sabotaged, where only certain artists would get signed, and it sounds like they have to have, like, a remedial education and talk about getting drunk and drinking some cough syrup nowadays. When it gets to this point, you knowing what you know and I knowing what I know and the host knowing what he knows, how do we navigate? If we think this way, we might make a 0.01% of the population. How do we navigate past everybody that doesn't think that way? Because it's almost like we're almost like a Neo in the movie The Matrix, trying to make it through all of this crap. But we're like a silent minority and a very small minority. So how would you suggest that we go through life to even navigate through all of this in order to survive emotionally and spiritually in the first place?
Well, first of all, I'm one person. You're one person. I have, thank goodness, I have examples of the impact that I've made. I get communications on a consistent basis from people who I don't even know, who tell me that the work I do has impacted their life. And these people are of all ages, predominantly Black, but of all ages. My point is that despite the fact that we're in a matrix, those of us who have clarity need to spread it. However, one thing that's very important, can't be abusive. Sometimes we get irritated with people and just start judging them. I'm talking about Black people, and start doing things that are hurtful and insulting to them because they're getting on our last nerves. Well, we have to stop re-traumatizing traumatized people. But before I get back, before I go any further in terms of treatment, I want to get back to methodological solutions. For example, Jews go to Jewish school. Asians go to Asian schools. Latinos go to Latino schools, sometimes simply just because they can speak another language other than English among each other. They have independent context where they are affirmed from a culturally independent.
Yes.
We have to start having Black schools and repairing in ourselves and teaching our children to decode and deflect the white supremacist mythology that they're going to run into. You just got finished breaking down some stuff that most of our children are guaranteed to have to endure.
Yep.
However, it won't impact them as much if they're trained by their parents that this phenomena exists. It's wrong, not you. We live in a society that has corruptions and imbalances, and it's not your fault if you run into it. There's nothing wrong with being black. You're wonderful. You're beautiful. You're my child. I love you. And then anything in a society that implies that you're bad because you're black, they're stupid and they're wrong, and make sure I know about it. See, most black people don't say that to their children because we've been trained to accommodate white folks. We don't realize it. That's why I call it a trance, because we don't even realize what we're doing because it's been ingrained in us. You know, act your age, not your color. Sit your black ass down. The song I mentioned earlier, where the guy says, I'm living my best life. I'm not going back and forth with you N-words. You're not going to hear a song that says, I'm not going back and forth with you kikes, you know, where Jews are making a song out of their own racist conditioning. We have been trained as a slavery to do that. And then until we unlearn the symptoms of white supremacy mythology, we're going to continue to teach our children to inherit this madness, and it's not going to go anywhere. We have to abnormalize it. We have to look at how we talk to each other, and we have to be good try to be good to each other, because we're trained to be more judgmental and hurtful of each other than anybody, including people that are racist to us. I mean, you saw what happened to Tyree Nichols in Memphis. Five black men murdered him. And people keep looking at these five black men and this murder as a black-on-black phenomena, but it's really a symptom of internalized anti-blackness that's the residual effect of living in a racist society.
Absolutely.
But we don't teach our children that they live in society. We call ourselves protecting them, but we're hurting them and making them sheep for slaughter by not telling them the truth about what's up with the society.
Right.
And if those guys who murdered Tyree knew that they were being played and that they were being conditioned by a system to be marshals of whiteness and patrollers of whiteness and anti-black by default, by being in a predominantly white controlled system, even when everybody's black, the system itself is still a white system. So
you know,
we have to teach our people the truth. Go on.
No, go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt.
Go ahead.
You know, you were making me think about something for a second. When you talked about this incident with got beat down in Memphis, Tennessee. I thought about this a while ago. I don't know if anybody thought about this, but when Will Smith went up to that stage and smacked Chris Rock, I said to myself, I said, this goes all the way up to Hollywood, to the Oscar Awards, because if that was Robin Williams up there, or Billy Crystal or Rodney Dangerfield, and he said the exact same joke. I hate to say it like this, but I'm just keeping it real. Let's say Robin Williams was up there. He was dressed the same way as Chris Rock was. He was the host of the show. Would Will Smith have walked up there in front of all of those people, majority of white people in the crowd, and smacked the crap out of Robin Williams just like he hit Chris Rock?
No.
It's almost like you think even he would have stopped it. He wouldn't have did it.
No.
He probably considers himself a really highly intelligent, you know, well-rounded brother. You know what I mean?
Right. But if you're absolutely right. But if his parents were proactive and taught, and he was taught that there is a system in this society that's racist and corrupt, that's wrong, and it's not you and black people that are wrong in this regard, that incident wouldn't have happened. Tyree Nichols
would not be
dead.
Listen, I don't mean to stop this, but we have another call in the crew. Brother, thanks for calling in and your comments. We have another call in the crew, so we got to keep it moving. Caller number 5, who am I speaking with?
Brother Ahmed. How you doing, Brother Strength?
How you doing, Brother Ahmed?
Good. Enjoying the show as usual. I agree with everything the brother was talking about as far as the trance. I was thinking about what I think leads to the trance, and I want him to give me his comment on how I break this down and whether it applies. I think that slavery, we all know about slavery, but I think slavery breaks down to three I's, and you can make any group can make a slave out of any other group if you apply this. If you isolate, intimidate, and indoctrinate for three generations, it becomes an acceptable condition, which then I think leads to us being receptive to the trauma trance that the brother is talking about. And it, what made me think about it this way was an old book from Frances Cress-Welsing called The Isis Papers, where she said, until we learn how to define and break down and isolate and understand white supremacy, we're going to keep repeating the same issues. I like his comments on that. Tell me what he thinks.
Well, that was Neely Fuller who said that first, and Welsing acknowledged that and mentioned Neely Fuller being a major influence on her. But yeah, I mean, it's true what you're saying, and we're in a trance. I mean, at the risk of being redundant, the bottom line is that we are in a multi-generational white supremacy trauma trance. Somebody mentioned the Black Wall Street incident, and there's been recent incidents. First of all, there were many Black Wall Streets in this country. There were Black Wall Streets in Baltimore. There are Black Wall Streets in Washington, D.C., equivalents, even in Central California, a town called Allensworth. So, and in Philadelphia, some of you heard about the MOVE group. Remember MOVE?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
MOVE, just like so-called Black Wall Street, had bombs dropped on them. And people were murdered under bombs. And they had a black mayor named Mayor Good, of all names, who was who suffered the same fate in terms of behavior that the people who murdered Tyree Nichols. And these are people who are trained by the system to be anti-black, to see anything that's pro-black as problematic. So yes, Dr. Welsing is a very important name to bring up because she's one of the most brilliant pieces of there is. Her interviewing Dr. Shockley on the Phil Donahue show, who was going around the country with the skeleton of an African American and a skeleton of a white person, with trying to claim that the brain cavity in a black person was smaller, and she ate him alive. And if you ever wanted to be well entertained, get some popcorn and watch Dr. Frances Welsing on Phil Donahue. But yes, Dr. Welsing was correct, and is one of my heroes because she was so brilliant. But she was marginalized because people who tell the truth in this society to keep us in the trance are marginalized because they want us to stay passive in a trance so they can stay in control. And so we won't rebel. If we're in a trance,
what do you think about my breakdown of how slavery works with the three I's? Give me your feeling about that.
I think you're correct. And I think that the issue that we have to remember is that those three I's are still here.
Right.
See, we think if we can go to Walmart when we get ready or get a good weave, that we've made it.
Right.
And we also define success in meaning that you have money. No, you could have money and be a failure. Michael Jackson is an example of that. Michael Jackson was a gazillionaire and went out and bought some white kids with all the black kids that he could have used his riches to affirm. He goes out and makes a legacy of white children, multimillionaires off of his black genius. So yeah, he was a slave. He wasn't free. A free person would have built a legacy of powerful black people to leave his money to. Now the Jackson family got to deal with straight up white kids sharing their legacy and their wealth. So the so what you just said, it's still true.
Well, Ahmed, thanks for calling in. We got more callers in the queue. Thanks for calling in. I'm gonna contact you, but thanks for calling in, brother. Caller six. Who am I speaking with?
Yo, this is Clever One, one half of the Booze Brothers, representing from the Broad Street Bully Side of Philadelphia, where your baby moms might cash app you for some crab legs after she done spent all the damn food stamps. But what's good?
How you doing, Clever One?
Oh, man, listen, I'm fabulous. Listening to all this wonderful information that's been passed around here. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to interject on a few things. You know what I mean? First, the hot topic is we're going to get touched the slavery joint real quick. You know what I'm saying? Because we got to understand this, people. I like to call it the flashbang effect, whereas though all of a sudden everyone doesn't know what was going on on this continent until 1700s, ironically. You know what I'm saying? However, what I'm saying this is because, you know, you had families out here that witnessed all that happening. You know what I'm saying? Because the people who, when that was happening, let's just take this figured out to see here. Because, you know, we got to welcome these people out of the war first before they get here to take over anything. You know, because we was here for thousands of years. You know what I'm talking about? So what I'm saying to you is that it's nearly impossible to kind of overcome a whole continent. Well, I'll give you an example here. Let's take Canada here. That's all Eskimo. You know who they were. You know who they is, all short, dark-skinned guys in the ice. You know who they are. Right, then you got all North America, all to the, you know, Mason-Dixon line. Then, let's see, you got those few Dixon states, but then you got South America. So it looks to me as if whoever was abusing slaves during that time in the 1700s was pretty much outnumbered and surrounded. You know what I'm saying? So the flashbang situation is this is how you blind people. If you convince people that everybody that's black got here in the 1700s, you won't be able to ask for nothing that belongs to you before the 1700s. You see what I'm saying? Because some of us know what was going on before all of that. You dig it? I'm Clever One, one half of the Booze Brothers, representing from the Broad Street Bully Side of Philadelphia, where it's by none. Get one free out of Macy's on 13th and Market down there in Center City. Check your satellites.
What? All right. Thank you for the comments, Clev One. Caller seven. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Paris. Caller seven. Mo Garman calling from Philadelphia. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mo Garman. Thanks for joining the show. What are your comments? Do you have any questions for Dr. Monago?
Actually, I wanted to thank him for clarifying why we as black people degrade ourselves and call each other the N-word. I thank you for not saying that word. It is something I just had to call in. And I was wondering, is there something that you address? Do you address this in your program, and how effective has it been?
Absolutely. I address it in my program, and the program has been quite effective. It's been evaluated by the Center for Disease Control as a successful behavior change methodology. And yes, it has been effective. It's not effective for every living person, but it's effective for a lot of people. And yes, it has been very effective, because the bottom line is, as I said before, we're in a trance. Our common sense is dormant, available under the trance state once we get some kind of proper intervention to deal with it. We are all, no matter how crazy we look, capable of transforming and healing, but we need the proper context and methodology. And I'm glad to say that I have one that can work. It doesn't work. Nothing is perfectly appropriate for every single solitary soul, but it's been evaluated scientifically as an effective behavior change methodology.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being a part of the solution.
Thank you for listening. And
thank you, Mo, for calling in. When is your next show, Mo?
My next show is February the 24th.
Okay. Look forward to it. Thank you for calling in.
All right.
Thank you. We have another caller in the queue, caller 8. Who am I speaking with? You're on the phone with on the line with Dr. Monago, Dr. Cleo Monago. Who am I speaking with?
Peace and blessings, Brother Terrence, and peace and blessings, Brother Monago.
Sister Bessie, how are you doing this evening?
All righty. And I want to congratulate you on your 49th record. Congratulations, my adopted son. So I have something to I have something to say. The system has not ceased from creating trauma in the black community. And the women are traumatized, the teens are traumatized, the children are traumatized, the elderly are traumatized. And I also want to say that the death of the young man by 5 or 6 cops, it has been brought to the masses' attention that these young, 3 of the brothers, officers, were members of the Boule. And if people don't know what the Boule is, that is a group of highly respected, fraternity. And they reported this and they apologized to the family because these brothers were belonging to that fraternity. And one thing I want to ask you and Dr. Monago, there is a law being enacted for separate courts system for white people. This is happening in Mississippi. They want a separate court system for white people. And I am thinking that the black people is going to be left out of that system because they want the system to be their judges white, the people that make the decisions on how you go to jail and everything. The whole system according to them, should be white. So I wanted to know what you think about that, Dr. Monago and Brother Terrence, and I'll sit back and listen. Now, my show is March the 3rd, and I'm Sister Bessie the Truther.
Thank you, Sister Bessie. Dr. Monago.
One thing for sure is that whiteness is going to take care of itself. Unlike black people who are entranced and being conditioned because of a lack of intervention to choose the white doll, white people are an active practice to keep themselves in control. And anytime something happens that defies that, they come back in a way to put things back in place. For example, Barack Obama was president for 8 years. And in my opinion, if he wasn't half white, that wouldn't have happened. But he was in the White House for 8 years, and he proved, whether he intended to or not, that particularly his wife, that black people are indeed not inferior and are not less than white people. So what white people did to make up for that is bring Donald Trump in to the White House because he was unnegotiably white supremacist. He was straight up about it, unlike Hillary, who was about it and more clandestine. They wanted a straight up, we're going to put America back together white boy who was going to be straight up and not abstract. So I mentioned that because that's an example of them constantly working on themselves and making sure they're going to be fine and that they're going to be in control. You might have noticed all of the biracial commercials. If you watch television, movies, series, watch corporate promotion, you're going to see the majority of people who are so supposedly black being biracial. And you're going to see that the majority of the people who's black have a white partner because that's been their way of trying to deal with their relative inability to reproduce. They're using black bodies as surrogates for the continuation of white people ultimately. And see, we think because we're so clueless, that it's what they're doing is an example of progress, but it's not progress. It's if black people are seeing white people as more beautiful, more safe, more emotionally, more emotional in terms of sanctuary and love, then we will not be loyal to blackness anymore. We won't be loyal to black progress anymore. We will be middle of the road, or in some instances, more pro-white, because we have learned to not value blackness and learn that it's not really that helpful to advocate for blackness, because whiteness is a choice, is an option for us now. One of the things that Dr. Welsing said, somebody already mentioned her, she said that if somebody invented an appeal where we could be white, we would take, admitted most of us would take the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in a white supremacy trauma trance, and if we do not break that trance, we are going to be in major trouble, and we're already in the trance, and there's already trouble. We just got to go on and face it and resolve it, because it is resolvable, but nothing is resolvable that you won't face. We have to face it. We are not facing it because we're, somebody mentioned Jesus Christ too. We think that to actually fight against white people or against whiteness, we're fighting against the grace of God.
Absolutely.
So we think that
absolutely
we think that all this stuff that's happening to black people is what comes of being black, and it's not. It's a symptom of a man-made bias system of control that is built on a house of cards that we can actually navigate past, but not if we don't actively and intentionally learn to decode white supremacy mythology and stop teaching our children about Santa Claus and the white Jesus and keeping them at risk to replicate the myth of their inferiority.
Yes. We have a track. Thank you, Dr. Monaga. We have a track by the International Navy Hall of Fame broadcast Lifetime Achiever, DJ Olasky. Brother, what do you have for us? And we can begin to wrap up after this track.
right.
Hello.
And there we go. Hey, Dr. Cleo, we're on. Clarence, what a great show tonight, man. And final thoughts from our wonderful guest, the good doctor.
Well, believe it or not, we just touched the tip of the iceberg in terms of all that we need to address to come out of the trance. Black people come from the most important components of the humans. We are magicians in many cases. We embody swagger and capacity and energy that no other group has. I'm not saying we're better or worse than anybody. I'm just telling the truth about where the swagger and the cool and the magic and the rhythm comes from. And if we knew who we were, we would never call ourselves the N-word. We would never be sitting back and letting a monster like white supremacy mythology just do what it wants to do to our children and let these systems raise and develop the minds of our children who wind up choosing the white doll as children and the white person as an adult. We could stop all of this, but we have to break the trance. And I'm glad to say that I'm involved in work that does that, and I invite others to do the same thing. We're going to be having retreats and all types of activities in the near future designed to break the trauma trance that Black people endure.
Dr. Monago, how do we contact you? And please put your information out there so that we can be a part of that, know about your workshops, seminars, or whatever. Please.
Okay, I can be reached at DR, as in Dr. Cleo, C-L-E-O, Monago, M-A-N-A-G-O, at BMX National, that's Barry Maxwell X-Ray National.org. And okay. I'm available to speak and do seminars and do trauma transbreaking work with everybody who's interested, particularly Black people. And we also do parenting work to teach Black people to be intentional parents instead of assimilated, paralyzed parents who don't teach their children to thrive as self-loving Black people in this society.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. It's been an honor to have you on, Dr. Monago. Brother O, what are your final comments?
All right. Awesome. Awesome show tonight. It's awesome. And God bless both of you, Terrence Strength and your guest, Dr. Cleo Monago. And I enjoyed you. I mean, Dr. Cleo, I really enjoyed you. The things that you said, and what I really liked tonight was the part about Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been a Black child. It should have been a Black child. It was a white child, and then look what happened. The parents, you know, had him in court saying, you know, he molested the little white boy. And, you know, it's just such a shame that when people of color, our people, get into position and when they become wealthy, millionaires, billionaires, and, you know, they tend to forget about their own people, and they'll go and they will promote and support people of other nationalities, other races, and, you know, and then what, he married a white woman and had children, you know, by her, and, you know, these things happen all the time, and it's really sickening, and, like, it used to upset me to no end when I see things like that, but now it's like, okay, this is what they choose to do, fine. And I used to get upset when I would see a Black man, you know, with a white woman, mainly when it was, you know, one of the celebrities. And, you know, but now it's like, okay, well, this is what they do. Hey, you know, maybe they're trying to prove something or, you know, and some of them it's like a complex, okay, well, we couldn't have a white woman back in, you know, when our ancestors were slaves. They couldn't have a white woman. Men got beat and killed for having a white girlfriend. So now they're trying to prove a point. Some of them are. And so, you know, it's just crazy. But please. Black men, Black women, you know, keep your wealth amongst ourselves. We have to keep our wealth amongst ourselves and not just so freely give it to others. I mean, we have to build each other up.
And so the things that Dr. Monago said tonight, he said a lot of profound things. And, again, I really enjoyed you, sir. And, Terrace, again, congratulations on your all-time connection record. And that's so awesome, Terrace. I am, again, so very proud of you and what you're doing and, you know, the asset that to WBNN and a wonderful, wonderful show tonight. And Brother O, the music you played tonight, again, always your music is good. It's absolutely good. And I just want to say, you know, me growing up, I'm going to try to be very brief. Me growing up, you know, my father, my mother and father, they were married and everything. And then my father, like, went sort of AWOL because he was in the Army. He served the country, and he went AWOL. And so anyway, and then he was MIA. And so the next time I saw my father, I think I was like about maybe 3 or 4 when he went AWOL. And then when I was about 8, we saw him one day, you know, just riding down the street in the tractor trailer. And he was blowing the horn. He was like, oh, my God, there's my dad. And so then the next time we saw him, it was him and my grandfather. And then after that, we didn't see him for a long time. And so he basically was not in our lives. Although my mom and dad were married, he was not. The Army just messed him up. And so then when I was about 30, in my early 30s, I believe it was, my dad, he was in the hospital. And so my mom told us, and my brother and I, we went to see him. And after that, we stayed in touch. And then once he got out of the hospital, he just started coming around, you know, coming to my house, visiting, and would go visit my brother. And then it was like he had never been out of our lives. So God had mended all of that from our childhood, not having him as a part of our lives. And then in adulthood, he was, and it seemed like he had never been gone. And so it was just so awesome then to have him in our lives, and it was a great thing. And so all of my children got to know their grandfather, who they call Pop-Pop. And in 2017, November 19th, my dad passed away. But I thank God that those years that he gave us together for about, I guess it was over 25 years that we had together, and it was just so amazing. He was always there. Anytime I called him, whether I'm like out somewhere in the highway stuck, and I call him to come and get me or give me a jump, instead of calling AAA, I call him. And whatever I called him for, he was always there. And, you know, he was such a loving dad. And so there are families that only have a mom that's there. And my mom did an excellent job raising my brother and I, because I turned out great. Well, my brother and me, I turned out great, and so did my brother. And then you do have two-parent families, and I always say, like, if there's a two-parent family, and the family is not in harmony, if they're not happy, if there's always arguing and discord and or even domestic abuse going on, or mental or verbal abuse going on, and the children are seeing that stuff, that's not healthy because it affects their psyche. So in a situation like that, I think that the parents, then they don't need to be together because of all of that stuff that's going on in the household. It could be very traumatic for children. And I've seen children grow up in those conditions, and they're messed up now because of what went on during their childhood and their home. So, yes, sometimes I feel as though it is best for parents to separate and the children be with the parent that's more stable, like mentally. And, you know, and the other parent should still provide, but then you have those households that the father is not there, not providing at all, not doing his duty at all. And that's a shame. when the man's supposed to provide support for his family, but so many don't. So it's so much that, you know, that we have to work on as a people and have households that are stable, whether it's a single-parent household or a married parent, you know, married couple household with two parents. But I believe that, you know, a child can thrive either way, a single-parent household or a two-parent household, because we've seen it happen. And I've seen two-parent households where the children grow up to be drug addicts and everything else, and the girls grow up to be loose and whores and out there having baby after baby after baby by different men. And then ones that have single parents, those kids grow up to be awesome. And that's just like with the projects. Every child in the project isn't bad, because we do have success stories that come out of the projects. So, you know, it's like crazy, but these are the things that we see. And so people should be able to thrive if they are determined. And determined to do better, they should be able to. So I thank you so much, Dr. Cleo Monago, for all that you said tonight. And, wow, I'm definitely going to go back and listen to the beginning of the show, because I did miss the beginning. I started listening about 10:30, because I was in a journalist meeting, and I enjoy it. So I'm definitely going to go on to Black Talk Radio and listen to the beginning of the show. And again, you were amazing, sir. And Terrace, once again, congratulations. WBN has advertising through Ngozi Time Multimedia. We're on Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter at Ngozi_time and Oladele Malewe Ngozi at Facebook. Any comments and suggestions for our wonderful programming tonight, oladele.ngozi@my.com. For our mothers and fathers' favorite producer, Oladele Malewe Ngozi, I am WBNN Commissioner Dr. Chinchilla J, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Forces Radio that support us on a constant basis. Stay tuned for Casual Chat. That's tomorrow night with Ava Holly, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on WBNN, or you can tune in at www.blogtalkradio.com. And please, everybody, don't forget to tune into News Forum this upcoming Sunday, when yours truly is the host. And this Sunday, we have two wrongful conviction cases and one update on a case of the young man that was paralyzed while serving a wrongful conviction. They paralyzed him in the prison. The COs beat him to paralysis, and now he's paralyzed from the waist down. We're going to have an update on that case, and also a couple candidates are going to share why they are running for office during this primary. Now, back to our International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting enshrinee, Terrace Strength.
Thank you, Dr. Chinchilla. I want to thank everyone for chiming in on the show and all the comments, fantastic comments. Dr. Monago, you were outstanding. It was an honor to have you on the show. I'm going to post your information up, and I was just blown away by your contact and the fact that you actually have a program to help us to break the trauma spell. So we're going to work together in the future, hopefully. But thank you for being on here. And my Facebook family, thank you. I will see you guys in four weeks with another show, hopefully something to help move the needle towards wholeness and freedom, and I will see you then. Thank you.